Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises, or the underwriters of this station. Hello, and welcome to Dig This, Trump Watch, with host Professor Parker Pollack. Hello, Professor Pollack.
Hi, Pamela.
Trump Watch airs the first Saturday of each month at 9 a.m. I am Pamela Spoto, and also in the studio is Craig Boyer.
Hello, everyone.
And Craig and I will be joining in the discussion, which should be exciting as usual. And I was just talking with Professor Pollack before we started the show this morning and mentioned to him that we have a lot to talk about. And the list seems to be getting endless, all of the different things that we can indeed talk about. And I'm going to just read a couple to let the audience know where we might be going here. And we're going to begin, as I understand it, with voodoo economics, the rebirth of voodoo economics, possibly go into the attachments to Russia, stumbling into various wars in and out of the nation, mental health professionals' conclusions about Trump's mental state. And we are still on the search for when America was great in terms of Trump's reference. So, Professor Pollack, why don't you tell us what you would like to say?
Okay. Thank you, Pamela. Our first topic, as Pamela mentioned, is voodoo economics, reborn, rebirth of. And that phrase came from President George Bush Sr., when he was running against Ronald Reagan for the 1980 Republican nomination against Jimmy Carter, who was the Democrats' nominee. And in the campaign speeches that Reagan would give, he would mention something that became known as, we're going to let this filter down through the system and everyone will benefit, cuts to the top. And as we know, we've heard that again, but candidate Bush at that point referred to trickle-down economics as voodoo. And it came from a fellow at USC. The ideas were generated by Arthur Laffer, L-A-F-F-E-R. And he has since retired, and he has a private consulting firm now. And he has broadened, for anyone who's interested in where and when trickle-down economics might be applicable, Arthur Laffer is still alive and well. And even though the Reagan adaptation of Laffer's early years, the Laffer curve, were misguided and did not produce the results that everybody thinks that it produced.
There's an irony here, Laffer and laughable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Well, in terms of trickle down, because it's never trickle down. It's like gobble up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. Well, it reminds you of the two things that my plumber friends always tell me. The stuff runs downhill and Friday's payday.
So, yes.
So at any rate, somehow Ronald Reagan got sold on that idea, and his 81 tax cuts were so severe that he had to raise taxes in 1982 and raise taxes in 1983. And finally, in the off-year elections in 86, he'd been reelected in 84. In the off-year elections in 1986, the Democrats got control of Congress. And between Democrat Brady from New Jersey and Democrat Kennedy from Senator from Massachusetts, and one other fellow from Iowa, another Democrat, these guys worked with Reagan and the Republicans in Congress, and they put together a package that those guys, Kennedy and Brady and the other Democrat,
Senator Tom Harkin.
It could have been Harkin. Right.
I think so.
And so you had a package that really did do something for the middle class. It may have been a little too hefty in total because in the Reagan years, even though he was promoted as a deficit hawk, the national debt tripled in the 8 years that he was in the White House, and so it was his inability to, or he didn't want to. But the fact that spending didn't drop as revenues dropped from his tax cuts, because the economy didn't grow, it didn't happen. And there is a letter to the editor, Donald Trump. He's listed here in the record searchlight as being the 45th president of the United States. Yeah. This is on October 25th of this year. The Record Searchlight produced a letter written, it's got Donald Trump's name on it. I'm not sure who wrote it, but he probably approved it. But he refers in his letter, touting the upcoming tax cuts that we're going through now, proposals, he touts what happened in the 80s with Reagan, and he talks about 81 and 86, but he doesn't say anything about the tax increases in 82, 83.
And this is a really, really important point, because it would appear that people and politicians only remember the first half, how convenient for politicians, mm-hmm. the tax cuts.
Yeah.
But then following that, because of what was happening, Reagan had to reinstitute those the taxes, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. it would have been very bleak.
Yeah, right, exactly. He wasn't willing to, one, reduce spending on the social safety net, and at the same time, he wasn't willing to cut spending on defense, because he was trying to scare Gorbachev into taking down the wall. And there are people writing on Gorbachev's thinking in those years, in the late 80s, and it's easy to find historians, Russians and others, who will argue that had Reagan not scared Gorbachev so badly, Gorbachev didn't know what the guy in the White House was going to do next, and so he didn't allow for the dismemberment of the Soviet Union until after President Reagan was retired. And if you remember, I used to get paid to remember this stuff. But if you remember, in November of 1989, the wall came down. We had a period there where President Reagan, over the years, he's had all kinds of monuments and airports and things named after him. And for the life of me, I'd like to dredge up some explanation for how this happened, but I have none.
I do.
Okay.
Just off the top of my head, no, and maybe this is incorrect. A friend of mine, it was more than a friend of mine, his father, he was saying that his father has a picture, a huge, almost a life-size picture of John Wayne on his wall, as well as Reagan. There was something about Reagan that instilled this hope, this great America again. Isn't that part of
it? I think so.
That
he was likable. I liked Ronald Reagan. I hated his policies
and his pictures, but go ahead.
But he was a great communicator, and he managed to instill a sense of well-being and confidence. That didn't mean it was true, but he managed to do that.
And I think it's so interesting that parallel with Trump in a way. Well, it's, I don't know, but Trump is on one hand saying make America great again, but his policies are certainly not doing that, but he's like telling people, his audience, that they can grasp a hold of. We're going to be great. We're going to be great. Oh, the Reagan years, we're going to be great. And it's just not true, mm-hmm. but it's interesting words. And I don't want to get into this, but we may be talking about mental health later, but President Reagan ended up with Alzheimer's. And so how long in office did he have that?
Good point.
There's so many unanswered mm-hmm. questions here and mm-hmm. things that we forget, this historical amnesia. It drives me wild that we don't remember this.
Well, and in those Reagan years, you might remember the thing that almost brought him to impeachment. And incidentally, regarding the talk now about President Trump's impeachment, I keep getting emails about this and that, and sign up for this and sign up for that. Almost every president since Nixon, has had the impeachment process begun, at least papers filed, for whatever that's worth, except for Carter and Ford. But the other ones, from Nixon on through Obama, have had the process, and we remember Bill Clinton's impeachment. He actually went to the Senate for the vote. So at any rate, that in the 80s, we had the Iran-Contra scandal, which darn near brought down President Reagan's term in office. It almost cost him.
But isn't Oliver North a talk show host now? I mean, those guys that were involved mm-hmm. with these lies and deceptions were not prosecuted.
Mm-hmm. No, I've seen Oliver North on on Fox News as a guest expert on this and that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
yes,
sure.
Yes.
He was convicted, and he did some time and was pardoned and is now out amongst us. But he ran a separate government in the basement of Ronald Reagan's White House. And so it was one of those bizarre things that after it happened, it was hard to believe that, is this really true? And then the collapse of the savings and loan business.
That's right.
Who doesn't remember, you know, getting a home loan at Shasta Savings and Loan right there in Reading, downtown Reading, later became Gibraltar. But President Reagan was into deregulation, and so in addition to firing the air traffic controllers and ruining that union and that profession, he also relaxed the rules on the savings and loan businesses so that they could lend on anything. They were created to lend on for housing, to generate housing for us, for Americans. But at the same time, Reagan, in his deregulation mania, he went ahead and changed the rules for the savings and loans. And so they did some things that were imprudent, some things that were unethical, some things that were dishonest and illegal. And one or two actually did, presidents of those savings and loans actually did some time.
Keating, notably. That's Keating, it. Charles Keating.
Thank you. I couldn't remember that. So what happened then, you had... You know, like if you have a bank account at a regular bank that's chartered through the federal government, then our accounts are guaranteed up to over 100 grand, something like right. that, which I don't have any problem worrying about that. Anyway, there was also an FDIC for the savings and loans, and it was right. called the FSLIC. And so as soon as the savings and loans started making these bizarre business decisions and started going broke, the FSLIC ran out of money. And to the tune of $300 billion, the federal government had to bail out the people who had accounts there, and their money was all had disappeared in squandered or ill-conceived investment. So anyway, but those two things stuck in my mind about the Reagan years, that is the Iran-Contra scandal and people lying under oath and then the federal savings and loan. But so anyway.
Well, Professor Paul, could I ask you one question about that? Because it is fascinating, because you brought this up, that there was a separate government running in the basement of while Reagan was in the White House. And was this run by Oliver North?
Yes, right.
Could you speak a little bit about that? Meaning those secret wars, those secret decisions were done by Oliver North yeah. and his
Well,
gang.
There were people in Nicaragua who were called the Contras.
Yes.
And they wanted to overthrow the government, the Sandinistas. They were, I can't remember exactly. I'm going to say they were representatively elected. At any rate, President Reagan didn't care for the Sandinistas, and he favored having them overthrown. And so yes. Oliver knew how he could get some guns and sell them to the Iranians and pipe the money into financing. Actually, it was just paying off, I guess, paying off the people in the Contras who, in Spanish, Contra means against, doesn't
right.
it?
Yes,
yeah.
it does.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So at any rate, then, those who were against the Sandinistas got paid off with the money that Oliver North got from the Iranians. And if you go back to the Secord testimony, all of that stuff, there were a lot of weapons unaccounted for at the end of Vietnam, and if you it happens, you know, in wars. If you look up Andrew Bacevich, Bacevich, Andrew Bacevich, he's a PhD guy, teaches at one of the Boston colleges. Anyway, he's a West Point graduate, Vietnam vet, got shot up over there, came back here, West Point graduate, went back to graduate school, got a master's degree, and then a PhD, and he really is somebody that, it's kind of like Matt Damon and Nicholson. You know, if Jack and Matt are in a movie, I go see it. I don't care what it is. or Meryl Streep. And if I run across a book or anything by Andrew Bacevich, I'll buy it, I'll read it. Mm-hmm. He's just one of those people that very, very worth paying attention to. So at any rate, Bacevich has got some stats on how many guns and chest armor and hand grenades and rocket-propelled launchers and how much cash, in terms of billions of dollars of cash, that are unaccounted for in Iraq. That the Pentagon can't account for. Mm-hmm. These are palletfuls somewhere. I don't know. Well, we have other things, I guess, we should be talking about now.
Well, yeah. You know, there are other things that we should be talking about. However, it is true that we have continued in the United States that way of behavior in terms of funding the opposition of people who want to overthrow governments around the world. We go in and help overthrow governments around the world. We're aiding Saudi Arabia in its attack on Yemen and the poor people and all the cholera outbreak and so forth that's caused by all this devastation. We just continue doing these kinds of things, and it's unfortunate that the public doesn't have a sense of this historical consequences of these kinds of actions. Mm-hmm. It would appear to me we continue doing the same thing.
Well, you know, I don't have a lot of contact with people from other countries, but what I have had, it seems to me that people from Germany and England and France, Italy, it just seems to me that they know more about what's going on in their country and in their region of the world, and they probably pay attention to us more than we pay attention to them, because we're the big guy on the block. But they just seem to be, you know, when you're talking to these people, they're engaged in the conversation, and they have background, and they're, you know, a couple of political scientists, a guy named Converse, another named Brennan, another named Dye, another named Ziegler. These guys have studied us Americans, and they've come to the conclusion, sadly enough, that we are ignorant, apathetic, and intolerant. And I hate to say that, being raised, you know, I'm an American also. But I started thinking about other people in the world. Maybe it's that the people in Europe, maybe they live so close to each other, they better stay in touch with things. Because the next time, when are we going to get invaded by Canada? You know, it's not a right now. The problem for Canada is that we are sending them refugees across the border because Trump has scared people in this country. And now Canada, I'm just waiting for it. Here it comes. They want us to build a wall, and we'll pay for it.
Yeah.
So stay tuned.
Wasn't there? There was a movie called Canadian Bacon, and it had to do with United States invading Canada or vice versa. But it was it just reminded me of that when you were talking about that. Okay.
Well,
all right.
Where were we on taxes and all of that?
We were, but one final question here, and you referenced America as the big guy on the block, and I'm wondering how does China fit into this, the big guy on the block idea? Because in terms of finances and what we're, you know, capitalism and global capitalism and so forth, and what we're going to be doing with tax reform, I mean, China has quite a bit of clout, does it not?
Oh, yeah. Well, if we just started with, of course, the dominance in Asia, and if you look at the way Korea is a peninsula that comes off of northeast China, and from South Korea, it's like the distance from San Francisco to L.A. to get from South Korea's border to Hiroshima, and so things are compressed over there. I mean, the power centers are compressed over there, and if you look at Beijing, which is way up north in the northwest part of, well, let's just say north, way up north in China, there's a high-speed rail. Like in Paris, it'll take you down to the south of France at gazillion miles an hour. there's one from Beijing to Kazakhstan. Yeah. China is on this path. They call it One Belt, One Road. To have rail contact with London. And it's down the road. You know, I mean, they don't think it's going to happen, you know, probably in my lifetime or even in Ping, or the new guy. Mm-hmm. The new leader there, even in his lifetime, but it's on the map. It's on their map, and so that's the kind of a player that North Korea is dealing with. When China tries to get North Korea to take it easy, don't call Trump a dotard. You know, please. You know, let's see if we can't get along with America. And if you don't say bad things about the United States and you don't fire off any test missiles. We know you have nuclear weapons. Realistically, the United States can either negotiate with you, or they can go to war with you. They can, in the middle, you've got sanctions. And so there have been negotiations or dialogue, and there have been sanctions. And But I think China will put the screws to North Korea if it comes down to them starting to, you know, first launch. That's my hunch anyway. So,
okay.
But, yeah, China is they're a powerhouse. Well, if you look at the world, you've got China and Brazil and India and the United States. Those are the power centers.
And yet we keep scapegoating Russia. But I don't want to go off on that right now.
Yeah,
but
yeah, well, we'll come back to China.
Okay, good. Yeah. So do you want to talk a little bit about this Christmas gift of tax reform for all Americans?
Including Wells Fargo?
personhood.
Yeah. Romney said it. Corporations are people.
I heard him say it. Yep.
Yeah. So at any rate, the tax, first of all, the idea of a tax cut in a country like the United States, like today, unemployment is really fairly low. It's not perfect in the view of the Federal Reserve System, and inflation is not as quite as high as they'd like to see it. But output is growing at more than 2% a year. And so those three variables would not lead you to think we need to have a tax cut. In my view, what we don't need is a tax cut. What we don't need is more spending power out there to stimulate. You know, does anybody here remember the 1980s and a home loan interest rate of 14%?
Yes, I do.
About a thing that'll put the screws to the housing market. Anyway, we don't need to return to that kind of thing. We don't need an injection of $2 trillion into the economy from the government to people anyway that will raise the national debt, because right now the Republicans and the people in the House and Senate are working on this are having trouble figuring out how to get that $2 trillion down. Where can they cut? Can they cut Medicare? Can they cut Social Security? Can they cut this? Can they cut that? And at the same time, President Trump wants to jack up the Defense Department budget by $10 billion.
More than they're doing now, yes.
So if they can't bring their expenses down, then this is going to be an injection of funds into the economy that will certainly run the risk of causing inflation. And Janet Yellen, the lady that runs chairperson of the board of Federal Reserve, she's going to bail in February. I think her 4 years is up in February. And a non-economist is probably going to get the job, a guy named Powell. You probably heard Jay Powell. I don't know much about him other than he was an econ major.
Well, that doesn't count, because a lot of, as we were talking about, a lot of Trump's appointments have no expertise in the area that they are appointed to. And in fact, many of them are hostile to the area that they're appointed to. Mm-hmm. So I guess it just doesn't matter that this guy is not a trained economist or has expertise in this area.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to ask you a question here, because I was joking, but I want to clarify that joke. The tax reform and the tax cuts are really not going, as I understand it, to the middle class and people, the working class. They're going more to the wealthy. Mm-hmm. And once again, the poor people or the people on fixed incomes are the ones that are allegedly going to be paying for this out of Social Security and Medicare. Mm-hmm. Social Security that people have paid out of their own pockets too.
Right.
It's really outrageous.
Yeah, you could expect to see an increase, as Reagan did in 82 or 83. Reagan raised the Social Security with the payroll tax, so you might expect to see that happen again. But this is from a couple of what I'm about to say comes from a couple of organizations that follow taxes pretty closely. One's called the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, and the other one's called the Tax Policy Center. And they've done some calculations here, and it looks like the top 1% again, that the Trump or the Brian McConnell, whose name you want to attach to this disaster in the making, it's going to be another way to increase income inequality in this country.
Yes.
That the top 1% who have incomes greater than $730,000 a year are going to see a huge increase in their income. And maybe 1.0 to 1.2 trillion will go to the top 1%. And probably about 25% of the middle class will be paying higher taxes. And so the people at the bottom, the working poor usually get left out of all of these kinds of changes.
They do. They continue to be the working poor. And and Professor Pollack, I just want to remind our listeners that this is Trump Watch with Professor Parker Pollack, and we are on KKRN Community Radio. Please continue, Professor Pollack.
Well, okay, thank you. So the idea that that the tax cuts are going to stimulate the economy, this is an old, worn out. It's not an old wives' tale. It's an old husband's tale. Got to be gender neutral here. It's just an old idea. And what happens when you give the corporations a drop in their tax rate? There's several things they did with it the last two times this has happened. One, they increase the dividends to their stockholders. Two, they go ahead and buy out competitors and reduce competition in the marketplace and end up being disadvantaged to the consumers. And thirdly, they oftentimes will buy back stock in the market to try to concentrate ownership amongst the few people that are left as stockholders as they buy back their stock. Or, as happened in 07, 08, and 09, they'll take the money and they'll invest it in flimsy financial sector gimmicks that caused the implosion of our economy and in the 08, 09 recession. They'll go into those goofy mortgages and I guess we don't want to get into tranching and all of that stuff. But, you know, the idea of investments with your money and my money into stuff that was just risky as son of a gun. They'll do that with some of the money. So, I mean, that's what they've done in the past, those four things. One of the things they haven't done is to go ahead and build another factory or add another shift. If you want to get Nunn-Bush Shoe Company to build a bigger factory, or if you want them to add another shift to their workforce, you need to increase the purchasing power of all the people in the United States who don't make 50 grand a year. You know what they're going to do with it. You know, my dog knows what they're going to do with it.
They got to spend it.
Yeah, yes. And yes, and Phyllis's cat knows what they're going to do with it.
Well, it is so interesting because I was listening to Democracy Now! This morning, I have to admit that, and Yiannis, I can't pronounce his last name, the former finance minister of Greece, and he walked out because of what was going on. But it was this whole notion of austerity that somehow, you know, the corporations can have the money, the financiers can lend money to the corporations, and then they pay back something over here, but the people are supposed to... The debt's going to go down, allegedly, if the people are living in austerity. And it just hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen. Right. They stay poor.
Sure. And in the case of Greece, they'll show up in the streets.
Yes, yeah, yes. Right. Uh-huh. And so, he was making a comparison between Greece and Puerto Rico. And I never quite understood, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of adding another dimension to this, that Puerto Rico is indeed... what a protectorate, another state, but they have no, and they're American citizens, but they have no, they can't vote for president, they can't go bankrupt, they can't make their own decisions, they have, he called it a board of bailiffs that kind of distributed the decision-making distributors.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there still with, you know, 80% of their power and water just being devastated. But Yiannis was talking about, you know, austerity for them because Trump is saying, they just haven't controlled their money right. But it wasn't them. It was the corporations again
and going
in and taking resources. So this whole notion of trickle down, in my mind, trickle down economics of austerity, or if you give these huge tax breaks to the rich, that somehow that's going to help us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't usually happen that way.
I haven't seen that.
Right. And so if you have a tax cut, in fact, what you could do, and it's on the books already, Milton Friedman was a guy from University of Chicago, an econ guy. He advised, I'm not sure President Nixon liked it, but he advised Nixon, if you want to have a war on poverty, what you need to do is don't fiddle with this welfare program because you spend too much money administering it. $13 would leave Washington, D.C., and $1 would get in the hands of a welfare recipient in the old days. So don't do that. Simply have a system where the IRS is there already. They've got the forms. and people fill out the forms, and if you don't make $24,000 a year and you're working full time, then you can go ahead and we'll send you the difference.
That's a great idea.
The earned income tax credit, it's on Form 1040, and if you just jack that up from $24,000, kick it up to $60,000 or $50,000 or some rate that where the working poor will become middle class or have a chance.
Well, you know, Professor Pollack, it seems like we in the United States, and this has to do with being, in my opinion, not being that informed, and also the narcissistic selfishness of Ayn Randian politics, that somehow these people are I don't know that we don't want to subsidize the working poor or help the working poor, but we're willing to subsidize the fossil fuel mm-hmm. industry. Mm-hmm. We're mm-hmm. willing to subsidize Walmart when they come and give them land.
Yeah, right.
And we're not seeing the benefit of what we're seeing from the fossil fuel mm-hmm, industry mm-hmm. is a total breakdown of climate for one thing, and that they've known about. So it's really kind of odd to me. We don't want to help those that need help most, but mm-hmm. we're willing to give billionaires mm-hmm. more
mm-hmm.
money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the idea that that Friedman sold Nixon was just follow the model that we have in the farm program, farm subsidies. If you don't think that Congressman LaMalfa's income is high enough from his rice, send him a check, which is, you know, that's the farm one part of the farm subsidy program. If you don't think that this fellow who greases cars at a car wash, if you don't think that his $24,000 is high enough because he has a couple of kids and a wife who works also, and together they make maybe $25,000 a year, send them a check for the difference. And you could do that. Somebody made the calculation that you could do that with about a fourth of this $2 trillion. You could. In fact, I think I'm going to stretch it a bit here. I think it was Elizabeth Warren, Senator Warren, who had run across a calculation that you could give everybody in the United States $17,000, every adult, every household. Every household $17,000 for those who make less than $60,000 a year with this tax cut. Now that will, as we
boy, would that stimulate the economy?
Yeah. See, the shoes would fly out of Nunn Bush's shoe stores. The inventory would drop. They would call the factory. The factory would run out of shoes. They'd have to put on another shift. They'd have to hire more people in the shoe store.
It's obvious, isn't it?
Yes, it's like high school economics. So at the same time, if you want to generate more employment quick, pay the salary or half the salary of every corporation who hires somebody in the next year. Make sure they're paying them at least $20 an hour, and the federal government will give them, the corporation, will give the corporation half of it back in taxes, in tax credits.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really simple ideas. You can encourage corporations to do things that are humane, but it has to be attached to money. That's legally the only thing they can respond to is money. Yeah. Okay. So at any rate.
Well, that's a great idea. That is a great idea, because rather than just giving straight out tax cuts to the wealthy for whatever mm-hmm. reasons, because you like the wealthy, you are part of the wealthy, mm-hmm. is that you reimburse them for the people that they hire at a living wage. That's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's pretty simple.
It is.
It's just we have, we can get into how the Democratic Party needs to restructure, reinvent itself. Maybe it'll another program down the road, because they have some chores with their new guy Perez, who's running the show.
Professor Pollack, would you like to take a break now, or would you like to say a few more things before we take a break?
Well, maybe we could close out our voodoo.
Okay, let's close out our voodoo economics.
Okay, yeah.
Halloween's not over yet, eh?
I wanted to mention a couple of books, three books.
Good.
That really are in the middle of this conversation. One is Thomas Piketty. P-I-K-E-T-T-Y, Piketty. Tom is a Frenchman. He did a 300-year, didn't take him 300 years, but he studied the 300-year history of capitalism in Europe and the United States. And his conclusion is that the way we have organized private property in the search for profits has resulted in the concentration of capital into fewer and fewer hands, thus the concentration of income into fewer and fewer hands. And that, you know, down the road, he's as an economist, he's not one of those guys that's going to wave a flag and say you're all going to end up in blah, blah, blah. But there's a warning in his book that you should do something. You better get a hold of this. And at the same time, Nancy Eisenberg, let's see, LSU, yeah, I think, she, yeah. Anyway, has done a study and a book. She has a book out on the 400-year untold history of class in America that we have. Well, actually, Nancy's book, the title is White Trash. Ever since King George, or one of the kings, started sending his rubbish, he called it, over here to the colonies, Nancy traces this class, the classes in America, and that over the years they've had different names applied to them, but still, in America, we have this group. And she goes into some detail about the way in which people can emerge from the group. She cites Dolly Parton, Bill Clinton, and Andy, who plays the cop on with Barney Fife?
Andy Griffith?
Yes, Andy Griffith.
Yes.
As those are three examples of white trash that escaped from their plight. I'd never thought of Dolly. Well, I guess I know a little bit about Dolly.
Yeah. Pigeon Springs.
She came out of,
Tennessee.
The Hollows. And, yeah, okay.
Wow,
yeah.
Okay.
So at any rate, those two books are really key to understand. And they're, I hate to say this, but they're each an inch and a half thick. So
Is it Petty, the first one? What was his name?
P-I-K.
P-I-K.
E-T-T-Y.
Okay.
Tom Piketty.
Okay.
And the last one is Francesco, or Francesca. I don't know whether the author, the book was supposed to arrive yesterday in the mail. I don't have it yet. But at any rate, D-U-I-N-A is the last name. Duina, D-U-I-N-A. And the book is Broke and Patriotic, Why the Poor Love Their Country. And it's kind of along the lines, if you remember a book, What's the Matter with Kansas?
Yes, I certainly do.
Not to make slurs against...
Well, that's kind of how I feel about Kansas myself.
Okay. At any rate, those three books are things that we can come back to as we have other programs. Yeah.
Well, I think that would be fascinating. In fact, maybe we could devote a show where we all read the book and we could talk about it. That would be really interesting, too. So,
sure.
So maybe in the future you could pick a book and we'll read it and we'll have a great discussion about that.
Okay. Well, Duina's might be the book to start with, since Nancy's and Tom's, they're a mouthful.
Okay.
Okay, so maybe is this the time where we take?
Well, why don't we take a short music break and then we'll be right back.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich. How much can she take? How much can she give? How much is too much, and how much longer can she live? As we turn our backs and turn our eyes and pretend we don't see. If ignorance is bliss, then full of bliss are we. As we take, 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 take. Like a good mother, Mother Nature keeps giving, but her heart must be ready to break. She's being abused and overused by her children who choose to ignore. There's only so much that she can give before she can give no more. Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. We poison the air, we poison the land, and we poison the water we drink. And we're the only known creatures in the whole universe with the ability to think. But we keep on thinking, having us lies and how much we buy and sell. And more paradise is lost. and only time will tell what will become of Mother Nature in the coming years, when we will have about 10 billion neighbors on the sphere. Will our children's children wake up to the American dream, or will it have become a nightmare beyond imagining? Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Let need not greed lead the way. We use so much and waste so much. How much do we really need? And how long can a dream survive that seems to thrive on greed? A little pollution is so thick and dark and dense, it contaminates and poisons common good and common sense. Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Let need not greed lead the way. Let need not greed lead the way.
And welcome back to Dig This Trump Watch with host Professor Parker Pollack. This is KKRN.org, your community radio. And we've been talking about voodoo economics this morning. And right before break, Professor Pollack gave you the names of three books, three authors and three books. It would be a wonderful thing to become, in my opinion, more historically aware of where we've been and what we've done and where we're going, as if this is something new with these tax cuts that President Trump is initiating as a Christmas present for the wealthy.
Or that the Reagan tax cuts were successful.
Yes, exactly. He had to go back and raise taxes again because he needed to do that.
It was disastrous.
I know. So we forget and we don't know, or that's the corporate media's spin on things. So, Professor Pollack.
Well, we'll probably come back to this again. When we get time to deal with the topic of when America was great, we'll probably end up tracing income inequality at some point. But there are, you know, by one estimate, there's over 500,000 people in this country that are homeless, and so at some point, I'm sure that well, I don't know. Maybe Donald Trump doesn't realize the extent of the problem, but there are. All kinds of things that I've got a list here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things that different cities have come up with to try to deal, not congenially, with the homeless problem. And so there's a culture war between the people that aren't homeless and the people who are. I sense it. You may sense it too.
Yeah. Well, what I'm noticing is that there's like about 3,000 around here that are homeless. That's the statistic I came across last. And the idea that we have low unemployment is an absolute falsehood, because there are people, as soon as they stop getting their unemployment insurance, they're no longer unemployed. So they're not counted as unemployed. And what I'm saying is there are thousands, probably like you say, mm-hmm. 500,000 people that are homeless, but they're quote, not unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
and
right.
It's getting to be a crisis. A real crisis.
Yeah.
And this is another thing that Reagan helped to implement when he shut down certain facilities and said, okay, for people who had mental issues, drug addictions and so forth, let the communities take care of them. And all the communities want to do, for Reading, for example, is put the guy on the bus and send him someplace
Or throw them in jail, like woman with the baby who walked out into the river there, and she mentally ill, she was hearing voices to do this. What did they do with her? They didn't take her to a mental hospital. They put her in jail.
Really? Oh, yes. This was by Park Marina, off Park Marina?
Yes, just recently.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh.
So there are a lot of homeless people mm-hmm. in this area. And one thing that we forget, and that goes to demonizing and stereotyping the homeless. And often a person is like one paycheck away from not That's being right. able to pay rent or pay a mortgage. I mean, I don't mm-hmm. think many mm-hmm. people have that much savings, as I understand it.
Right.
And then we have vets. We have the mentally challenged people. We have drug addicted people. We have people who have gotten sick. We're one of the few countries where if you get sick, you may go bankrupt and mm-hmm. lose.
There's, Entirely likely to happen.
And so yeah. there's a yeah. real combination of reasons why people are homeless, and we really should be working on this if mm-hmm. if we mm-hmm. are an empathetic, compassionate country.
Well, it probably starts at the state level in Trump's view. Maybe there are movements afoot here and there. Many of them come out of churches and nonprofits to try to help the homeless. But
isn't that, Professor Pollack, that is so frustrating, because out of my taxes, so much money is taken to add another trillion dollars to the war machine that just kills people and creates suffering. But churches and private people have to get their mm-hmm. money together yeah. to help yeah. another American.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing I've
adequate.
Seen in Reading.
That's never adequate.
Yeah. So, it doesn't match up to the need. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Well, just as a parting comment about income distribution, if in the United States today, if you had only five people and only $1 of income, and you took the five people into a gymnasium with 10 rows of seats in the bleachers, and you put one of the people in the top row up there, and the second person down in the bottom row in that bleacher seat, and then sprinkled the other three people between the two of them, the person at the top, out of that $1, the person at the top would have over 50 cents, and the person at the bottom would have less than a nickel. And it gives you some idea of the distortion of income distribution in the United States. So, well, I think maybe we were going to go into what was called, we called it Russian anxiety.
We have about 15 minutes left, so you can decide whether you want to go into Russian anxiety or wars or mental health. That's totally up to you, Professor Pollack.
Well, let's see. I don't know the mental health thing.
That's been weighing heavily on my mind.
Yeah.
Tom Steyer is bringing it up to the whole of the United States. I imagine many people, listeners, have seen the ads on television. Yeah, talking about
we have I haven't. So.
Tom Steyer, he's spending a lot of his money to let people know that we have an unstable, mentally, emotionally unstable president, and that if we're going to do the right thing, the moral thing, we need to get him out of office, impeach him,
and then Pence mm-hmm. will be president.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's not comforting, but I'm not so worried about him creating a nuclear war. That's my main concern right now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I also have been running into the comments, and Steyer's came across on the computer about signing up for the impeachment process, and I think from John McCain's point of view, he teased Donald Trump about not serving because of some problems, foot problems.
Bone spurs,
okay.
Yes.
At any rate, McCain was taking some barbs from the president, so he replied with that. And so
I think Trump called him, you're no war hero, or something like that at one point.
You were captured.
Yeah.
I don't like people that are captured.
That was early on, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was. Right. So McCain is turning the tables on him now?
Well, but in the last, 4 or 5 months, actually, yeah, 4 or 5 months, I've got a list here of things where President Trump is not coming out looking very good. This is comedians, cartoons, letters to the editor, opinion polls, even one from Quinnipiac, which is, I guess, top of the line when it comes to polling. Yeah, journalists, psychologists and their association, psychiatrists and their association, and the American Psychoanalytic Association, various congressmen, men and women, and even Republicans in the Senate and the House are beginning to come out and say really unkind things, indicating that possibly they are convinced that the president isn't fit to serve. And one of them actually, a Republican actually said that, that he didn't think that he was fit to serve. So,
and isn't he the one that it wasn't going to be running again and he resigned and said...
He's not going to run again, Right. There's two of them, Corker and Flake as well.
Flake was the one that I had heard. So under those circumstances, Professor Pollack, of this list of that you just gave us, then who the heck is still supporting Trump? And I had read in the past that those that the Trump supporters that are heavily into supporting him are making threats that, you know, we're armed and ignorant, but we're armed, and so you try to impeach this guy, and there's going to be it's this threat stuff. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how serious that is. Or
well, when he was campaigning, he did give the impression that he was lashing out at the system. And that attracted a lot of support from people who thought that the system had given them the short end of the stick.
Right.
And they didn't see, and they couldn't see any way out, as we were talking earlier, for their parents, themselves, their children. Disillusionment and despair seemed to be, especially in the Rust Belt and other communities who've seen technology, not globalization. The jobs were not sent to China. A few, yes, a few to Mexico. But 85% of the job loss in this country is automation. We did it to ourselves. So at any rate, I think the people who have been tossed aside, booted out or left behind in the economic system, haven't been able to find a way to get back in. And he gave them some hope, false maybe, but he gave them some hope.
And that's what I mean by ignorant. I'm not trying to put down anyone, and ill-informed in terms of corporate media. And also, what Craig had mentioned before the show is that, and we've talked about that too, Professor Pollack, is that Trump will say one thing one week, and then it's a total, I don't know if that is a lie, and he just says something else the next week, and then the next week. So these voters that thought, okay, I'm going to be helped. I'm going to be helped by this person who says that he's going to do these certain things for me when he becomes president, and I vote for this person. But if you look at his record and you realize he's a narcissist, you know, and we don't even know whether he's a billionaire or not a billionaire.
But he's most certainly a liar.
He's a liar. that he won't release his tax returns. And I had a person online who is gay, and she said, you know, Trump, this is going to be good because Trump champions gay rights. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. And initially, he may have. But then after he becomes president, in order to cater to another clientele, that has changed.
Yeah, it depends on the environment he's in.
Or when he said, you know, we shouldn't be invading. We should never have invaded Iraq. We shouldn't be doing this in other countries. And then he's upping the military-industrial complex with all the money he can.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I think that's why some of those people in those... You know, in the fields of psychology and psychiatry and psychoanalysis and all of that, they used two of those professional organizations had what they called the Goldwater Rule, and that they wouldn't analyze from afar if the person wasn't their client and they hadn't seen them, you know, personally.
That's right. And
so the Goldwater Rule has been set aside.
That's right.
And they've picked up another ethical commitment, and that is duty to warn. And so now duty to warn the public that there's someone in the White House that may not be fit to be there, that's the mantra that they're using to justify when they're doing things in public, calling for his impeachment or at least questioning what he's doing and staying on top of every behavior that he has, that he exhibits. And so you have those people who still are convinced that he's their man. And, you know, it strikes me, I'm glad you said that, Pamela, it strikes me that how would it be if the guy who was going to get you out of the gutter hasn't done anything for you yet, and you don't see anything down the road that he's proposed that's going to help you get your pickup out of the ditch or your life out of the doldrums, and now people are suggesting that they want to impeach him? Well, what are you going to leave me with? I mean, I'm trying to, you know, put myself in the mind of one of those people. Good grief. Now they're going to take him away? Well, he was the only hope we had. And so maybe that would lead people to get their pitchforks and go out into the street.
Or, uh-huh.
Yeah. You heard references to we have guns. And
yes, yes. We have guns and you're not going to just try and impeach this president.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So.
Well, what's surprising to me is that I reading at several different occasions that 80% of all Republicans still support him. Isn't that amazing? Yeah.
I'm stomping
yeah. on the floor because I was just at, I had just read somebody had sent me 78% of Republicans still support Trump and I'm mm-hmm. and I'm thinking mm-hmm. how is that possible? He's destroying the environment, he's deregulating everything he can, he's peopling the cabinet with people who have no expertise in any of these areas, he's threatening North Korea, he's threatening other countries, he changes his mind from week to
he's
week.
He's emotionally unstable
and he's a narcissist. How in the world can 78%, 80% of the Republicans support this person, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, except mm-hmm. the fact that they don't want a Democrat?
Right. I have a hunch, or I'd like to believe that the way the question was phrased to those people was such that let me give you my hoped-for version. You know, a group of people who say they voted for Trump and they say that they're Republicans, and so there you've got the cohort. And now you're gonna ask them questions about whether they've stayed tuned in to what's been going on in the world, and you come to a conclusion that 80% of them, or 40%, 60%, some percent of them, are really up to snuff on what's been going on, and so you put them in the room, and then you get to the point where you're gonna say, are you really going to support do you still support the president? And if 80% of those people said they did. Wow, I'm in the ballpark when I'm tearing out my hair. These are literate, informed people.
Right, right.
And they're saying this?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so I get, there might have been a way that, I'm trying to hunt for an answer here, there might have been a way the question was phrased.
Well, you know, Professor Pollack, you had also mentioned that in terms of voting and getting this person in office, that was it 27% of the eligible voters voted for him and 28% mm-hmm. voted for Clinton? Mm-hmm. So that is not... mm-hmm. We need a lot more voters, informed yeah. voters, educated voters, people who are staying on top of what is happening to our infrastructure, to the parks, to the environment, to education, all of those things. And we have about 3 minutes left.
Well, let me just throw in the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. A branch of the United Nations that helps underdeveloped countries become developed, they're advising and cautioning America, don't do the tax cut. Don't do it. We don't need further inequality of income in the world. It's bad enough already. And there's a fellow who is a CEO down in Silicon Valley. His name is Marcus, last name R-Y-U. I'm not sure I can pronounce that, but he said, we don't need a corporate tax cut. What we need is more money spent on education because we can't find qualified workers and we have to go overseas. You know, the HB1 visa thing.
Yes, yes.
And so he says, infrastructure and education. Sounds like Senator Warren.
Yeah. And so education, healthcare, really, really important issues for us as a country.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are, let's see, in this week, a magazine that comes out every week, the last issue, they went through a situation describing how President Trump is unraveling, and they cover in this article many of the things that we've just been saying that we've run across in other places, and the picture of President Trump is there with a grim look on his face, and it's that he's becoming increasingly unfocused. That he has to have, he said the other day, according to this, I hate everyone in the White House. Mm. Now, that's a guy that doesn't want to go to work in the morning.
Doesn't work well with others.
Yeah, he doesn't play well with others, does he?
So there's so much good information here, and we're almost out of time. We are out of time. And so I want to, and we can pick this up. We can continue this next month as well. And I want to thank Professor Pollack, and I want to thank Craig Boyer and Shane Houchins, of course. And I'm Pamela Spoto. And this was Dig This Trump Watch on KKRN Community Radio. Tune in next Saturday for Pearl on Politics with Professor Pearl examining the alt-right.